Good evening, friends. As you know, the title of today's talk, We Are What We Think. Very simple statement, but actually, it is an enunciation of our psycho-spiritual law. And that you are going to take into account that as law, how it is applicable not only to our ordinary life, but how even a great being like Lord Buddha, of which we just heard read on millions, how thinking transforms the man into a Buddha. So here is a great gift, a divine gift in man, the capacity to think. And therefore, it is worthwhile first to consider the sense that we are what we think we are. Now, who is this we? So this is the first question one should ask ourselves. Or you know, you say, who am I? Now, look at the controversial opinions may come up on this issue. Psychologists, scientists, medical men may think otherwise. Religious people may think something about man in a different light. Philosophers have a different view on man. So there are not a conflicting view, but we at least take into account two or three, just an outline. Then particularly psychoanalysts and narrow religious people think that man is really an intelligent animal, rational animal, a thinking animal. They go a little further, say it's a social animal. But the emphasis is on animal. Probably because they have most of the thing, they think most of the time the man is motivated by his impulses, by his intuition, by instincts. This is very strongly than animal. So although man is a rational animal, he is most of the time moved from behind, possibly, by his instincts. That's quite a local and narrow view. A little better view, which has come up of late, you see, by this business schools, gurus. They think that no, man is a great creature, so he has got a great power to think. And not only to think, but to achieve. That man can achieve what he wants, that nothing is impossible to man. That is a kind of a force to which they are emphasized. And they try to encourage the zeal for ambition. And in the bargain, in the actual bargain, that zeal to achieve, to achieve, to achieve. If you will notice, people have lost zest for living. And we are not exaggerating. Actually, it is a fact of life that young people who right from childhood is motivated to achieve must move forward. It's a competitive world. You must do something, otherwise you will be left behind. That fear. Therefore, in an effort to achieve, they lose a lot along the way. And along the way, there are many beautiful things to see. They don't enjoy their own family. You know of a definite person, a very highly advanced person, very gentle, very sweet by nature. But he is hardly available to his own family. He has to send away his children to very rich schools somewhere outside Bombay. But he misses them actually, he says that. But he cannot help it, he has to keep on driving. Because he cannot now turn back on the ambitions pathway that he has selected. So this is another way of this work or business schools. They keep on driving you with full of enthusiasm, but on the way, they miss a lot of human touch, of humanity, the human aspect of life. Now, recently, of course, there are a lot of what is called motivation psychologists are also. Then there are what are known as humanistic psychologists. Now, they have come a little closer to philosophical view, and they say that no, apart from the Freudian view of man is endowed, man has got some his lower tendencies, his instinctual needs and desires, particularly motivation psychology say that of course man has got some basic needs. Many ordinary basic needs like okay, kabla, makan, relationship, etc. But there are still higher needs in man. which are there, which is encouraged. If given an opportunity, they can flower. So one of the great people, if you see the study of the life of great people, they are motivated from deep within them to achieve something other than their immediate goals. And the immediate goal may be scientific, mathematical, this, that, and the other. But there is something that motivates them to achieve. Because they want to grow in their own eyes. That they are not worried about what others think about them. They are not even honestly concerned about applause from the world. But they want to achieve at their own height. Therefore, the self-actualized or self-motivated people. And therefore, what is noticed is that they have in them that human potential. And that human potential in the man is awakening, is waiting to unfold. Either given an opportunity or over a period of time, if it is there, somehow it wakes up. And then we have a very vivid example of Einstein, who in his school days was a backbencher because he was autistic, partly autistic. And then he was unable to express it because he was quick to understand that problem from the class. But he could never raise his hand because he was not able to express it. So such a man overcame this difficulty. And you know what Einstein is, what he is today. So this is also another very latent in man. There are many unknown children you see on this world who are on the verge of developing, but given an opportunity they could flower or guide proper life, proper education. This is what the education has missed. Well, education is learning by rote. Now we definitely know it is nothing else but memory quota. And then you vomit out what you have learned and then you achieve what you have known as achievements. So this is a very limited view. But I mean, fortunately, this motivation psychologists have said that there is in man something other than the mere instincts and rational thinking. No wonder it's a very great thing to be a rational being, to be able to choose rationally, to think clearly for oneself, instead of dependent on others. That is a very great gift, real gift. But one and all that, the other factors and gifts lie latent in man. He has also got capacity, further from that, that a man has got natural capacity for goodness. That he wants to not only wants to improve his environment, but he wants to improve himself. It is said that among the cavemen, actually when they were found, discovered some caves, where there were paintings drawn with very crude kind of paints were selected. But they want even decorate even their own little huts or little small places in which they were hiding. So even a caveman wants to decorate his cave. So this instinct to decorate, the instinct to do oneself, the instinct to grow, is because the instinct, but actually it's an intuitive urge in man to improve himself, to progress, to go further, move on. So this drive is actually quality in man. But then it all depends on what the kind of image we have about ourselves. So that's what we are going to say. About man, as far as the Oriental psychology is concerned, is about his theosophy, ecstasy and God. The man in his true nature, as the name suggests, is manushya. Man-bearing, mind-bearing individual. A mind-bearing entity. And the mind is a tremendous gift, a divine gift actually. Capacity to think is no ordinary thing. He head and shoulder above all kingdoms of nature. In fact, he is called the crown piece of evolution. Evolution is accepted that he is actually a crown piece. Because ultimately, over and above biological development, he developed his mind to such an extent, entirely a different dimension of thinking to which he could reach, he is capable of reaching. Now that is one thing makes a man superior to all kingdoms. So we basically a thinker, but he also has to accept. It is so because he has his origin at a very profound divine source. That in essence is actually divine entity. Of course, dwelling in an imperfect body or working through a mind, which also is to some extent handicapped through his brain centers. But in spite of this,
that spark of luminance is still there in them. Now, if you can keep them in view, then you will look, you will find that when you talk about who am I, who are we really? So we are concerned about that inner man, the real man, who is, and in fact, the real life of the man is the inner life of the man, which is that silent life, which is not so easily available to accept. But to which we are content to notice that we are not merely a thinker. But behind the thinking faculty, there is a thinker in his own right. He is also a chooser. That he chooses, not merely impulsively, even. That is a gift that, with which man is endowed. And therefore, we call it a free will. That is free to choose. He can damn himself, he can make himself the way he wants to go. And these are the actual gifts with which a man is endowed, but unfortunately lying latent, unused, or improperly used. Now, if this is the view of man, that man, in essential nature, is spiritual, using the gift of his mind in order to unfold the inner potentiality that is lying latent in him, and unfolding is literally a process, it unfolds. But it's there, which is lying hidden, like seeds. That is can be, which is first to the light of it. And then man awakens. Man has got great capacity of all the achievements of humanity, all the great things that have happened on this earth, is the achievements of man's not mere physical effort, not mere intellectual effort, but the inner man. The inner value is that which is man. And then he always, something in him pushes him upward and forward. And it is true that he has always pointed out that it is his spiritual nature, it is his inner nature, which drives him, which wants him to become better. So no wicked man wants to remain wicked. No criminal would like to remain criminal. Even if they boast about being a criminal, you know, there are criminals who boast about their achievements. How many people he has killed or how much he has achieved. But in the back of it, there is some kind of urge to become better. And he can be even saved, you know, from that dungeon. That is possible to happen. Now with this, with the background, we come to again the adage, hear what we think when we say. There are two ways of looking at it. We are what we think we are. If we, that is our self-image. If our self-image is limited, constricted, negative, we constrict ourselves, we remain ourselves a limited man. This is a true fact. The strong way of our image, what we think we are, is a poor creature. That's how the church is telling you. The poor man is a sinner. He is very essential in that birth. The whole humanity was born in sin. And therefore he is a poor sinner. And because he is a poor sinner, he requires help from us. So you take away even, not only you take away his self-image, pure good image of being a Christ within him, and being a divine spark within him. But you make him a puny dependent on the church, the priest, the ceremonials and all of the things. That's one way of looking at it. So the image of man is therefore very important, that self-image. Now self-image can be exaggerated, that's also true. There are people who have got a heightened view of themselves and get no end of themselves, because just because there are degrees behind them, or just because they have a huge bank balance. And now, you see, people are publishing all this, multi-millionaire Mr. So-and-so. The other I said that one of the richest Parsi in the world is so-and-so. Not to boast about being a richest man now, what about that? What is he rich in his quality of his heart? The quality of his mind? That richness in his true nature. This is forgotten in the midst of this competitive world. So this is a very sad picture. So now, if you go to the very first quotation, he says, we are what we think. What we think is what we are. What we hope, that's another, what we hope we actually. Now, here is something there, that is a hope. Apart from our limitations to which we are born, there is a hope. I know, I know personally, a child who asks you one time, a school boy, age of 10, He also said that, uncle, I have seen roses and mogra. Mogra, I like, I love mogra. But can't a mogra become a rose? Why are you asking? He said, it's a biological question. Oh, no, I'm not. Suddenly, I'm a mogra. Then he says, I'd like to become a rose. Can I become so? No, no. You are genetically left to become a mogra. You can imagine this child went into the room and wept. I can't become great. To think those were the most beautiful thing you could ever conceive of. And mogra to him was simply beautiful and simply fragrant, but not so beautiful. That comes from the imagination of the child at the age of 10. And he mentally resolved to become somebody. Now, even though the child was born with certain natural gift of this kind of resolve to become better, luckily for that, in spite of all the conditions of his environment, I know for sure, all the oppositions in his family life for a number of years, he really traveled out simply because he had got that inner driving. Want to become, his self-image was not shattered as that uncle. Temporarily was shattered with that. But he kept himself in the picture in his mind. And then in his school, he had a diction, knowledge is power. So that appealed to him. He says, no, knowledge is power. He says, then I must gain knowledge. Because I want to achieve power. And he wanted to achieve power through knowledge. This is another drive that father had him. So here is something which can a thing can flower for. A little bird, you don't know what's going to become. If you give your body, you don't know what is going to become. But then, when it has suddenly become something extraordinary, you cannot know. But you have this ability to give that child the opportunity and to notice a little gift in that child. As it happened in the case of Alan Keller, that the teacher noticed the genius in that child and helped that child to overcome all the biological difficulties. So that it is that there is hope. Then what we hope we shall be, that this child had a hope to become somebody, and then we can become somebody. And then, therefore as we said, it requires understanding of the human nature. So what we record is the psychodynamics of human achievements. If you see to it, that if we are, as Lord Buddha says in the very first quotation in his Dhammapada, that all that we have is a result of all that we have thought. He says that the very, very first quotation in the Dhammapada is most amazing in the 12th quotation. All that we are is the result of all that we have thought. All that we are is founded on our thought and is born of it. But this is a tremendous psychological state. That what we have today is the sum total of the collectivity of the thinking, feeling, willing, and we have undergone during this period of life. That is, either we are self-educated or we are helped out in our upgrowing process. So we are the result. Now, if we just said that if there is hope for man, that if he hopes, he can achieve. But then why there are so many failures? Why there are so failures in spite of, if there is a guarantee that if I want to achieve, I must be capable of achieving. People really want this, want that, and yet they don't really achieve. Why so? Now to answer that, people say, oh, my destiny. They blame environment, they blame condition, they blame so I'm born in a particular handicap. So they keep on blaming their condition and circumstances of their life, never thinking that they can blame themselves for what has happened. But they would not accept themselves, those say, oh, my destiny, I'm born like that, in that condition, what can I do? I can't achieve. But then there is another way of life. So no matter how much you may be handicapped in life, we are the cause of that environment. Now this is the law of karma. Here is a very important contribution of yourself, Lord, the ancient wisdom. That all that we are is the result of all the actions in the level of the thought, feeling and action level. That we are the product of past activities. In fact, we are even physiologically the product of what is happening to the mother in her own lifetime. When the baby is in the womb, whatever happens to the mother can also affect the child. So, blame the environment, blame the destiny. No, the very fact that the child is born into that particular mother, in that particular environment, is said to be the resultant of the kind of living he had lived somewhere in the past. So this is one thing considered as the law of karma. That all action has its consequent reaction, and one of the results of the action is the kind of life we are living today. That we are born in a particular environment, particular condition, particular makeup of our personality is the result of all that we have lived in the past. So when we say all that we are, it says not only merely body, mind and soul, all the three combinations. That whole makeup, total makeup, is the result of the quality of the life we have lived somewhere in the past. This is an affirmation by Lord Buddha, by Lord Krishna, particularly Lord Krishna, telling Arjuna that you do not remember your past. That doesn't mean you leave past to the past. All the kings and all those things are passed by. I can see them and they went before me. They are the product of that own past. True, so we are born with certain limitations as well as gifts. But what we are going to do with the gifts, that's more important. Now, this is what happened to that young boy, as I told you. He was born with certain limitations, but he was also born with motivation. That inner motivation that he wanted to achieve, right, from childhood. And this is something, a spark we can enlighten in a child. If the child wants to achieve, say, skating, or swimming, or cycling, encourage him, because he wants to do it. He wants to be rash, he wants to try this, he wants to try that. The education is our tremendous responsibility. They are like gardeners, they have got that little seeds in their hand. And they can do a lot to the future of humanity. That book, Mind Unknown, 3/4 of his book is dealt with that. How much educationists can contribute to the welfare of humanity. You see, you catch them young. See the inner quality of the child and then flower for it, sparkle it up, light it up, kindle it up, and encourage in that right direction. This is the beauty of the education. So, among the gifts with which a man is born, there are two most important gifts. The power to think and the will, the power to will. What in secret doctrine called the Ichha Shakti. Ichha Shakti is the power to will. And unfortunately, this will energy is so much caught up in our desire nature. See, many times when we will it, we merely will it through desires. And we are so much will, we will and think and feel in only terms of our own lower local nature. We have not widened our horizon because we think very narrowly. So another thing, the thinking faculty. So what that will require is a wider view of life, wider perspective of man himself and a wider perspective on life itself. And that is why the philosophy is there in the world. All the world scriptures are trying to widen our horizon, widen our perspective and gives a depth to man's nature. So long as we are proud of being man, that is, proud of having that faculty to be able to conceive in depth as well in his wideness of his possibility, beyond you, to be able to see beyond your horizon. That capacity to pursue things beyond the horizon is gifted in man, is there in man, awaiting to unfold. So when we say all that we are, is what we think, is not merely thinking on a, thinking doesn't mean celebrating, not at the brain level. Thinking in a deeper level, thinking to some purpose. There's a book called Thinking to Some Purpose. Which students are reading in this college days, thinking to some purpose. That is thinking with the purpose of achieving the inner qualities relating to man. And then a very good picture is given, you see, in theosophical literature. It is given out this way. I think it's not here, but I've got it here. It says, that the, a man is like a gardener. That he is given a field in which he can cultivate, he can till the soil. He is also given a handful of seeds with which he starts his life. So man is already born, whether with a large or a limited field, or a beautiful, fructifying, poor or high quality seeds with which he is born. Through that is his destiny. But he is a gardener. He is the one who is responsible and given the field. But what is he going to do with the field? That is a genius that is required of him. We'll quickly tell you the story of a man who was very much wanted to become an agriculturist, but he couldn't achieve being an agriculturist. He was a mechanical man, mechanics. So at the time of retirement, he collected all the money, invested it in buying a field. And meanwhile, he was also studying a lot of agriculture. So he invested his money in agriculture and bought the field. Within 2 years, the workers which were working for him deserted. Why? Because there were large pythons coming up on his field. They were frightening him, huge pythons. The field was full of pythons. He was wondering what to do. He wrote to various departments in government, what can I do with these pythons? Shall I kill them, do this, do that? Somebody wrote to him that in some part of the world, people are fond of python flesh. He said, oh, I can make an industry out of this. So he actually created a factory. He caught python, cultivated them actually, and then he thinned their flesh and made money out of this. This is a resourceful man. That he didn't say that, oh, what can I do now? My all money is lost and so on. He created a kind of a resourcefulness. So this is another thing which can be cultivated. And because he had got high image about himself, he wanted to achieve and he achieved it. Of course, he couldn't become an agriculturist, but he used his will, the creative way he wanted to do. So this creativity is inherent in man. This is what we are going to do. And with this Kriya Shakti and Ichha Shakti, these are the two Shaktis with which every child is born. He is capable of willing something. If that will is not trapped by his lower desires, he is just caught up in his worldly desires, then the faculty of that will is not free to unfold itself. Similarly, this capacity to think, capacity to create image, capacity to foresee, perceive, this kind of thing is there in every one of us, just wanting to give a little spark and achieve it. So many of us, some of us, many people have begun at a very mediocre level in their college days or school days. We shone off, she shone forth. Many, many great geniuses that we know, you see the early years of their lives, very ordinary, unknown fellows. But in the later years of their life, they have done something extraordinary. Read the life of great men, you will find their beginning was really handicapped in many ways. But then something happened to them. But that, the one thing that sparked off was the will to achieve, the will to grow, that will to unfold itself. Now this is something which is inborn in man. That man is born because there is a very impulse given by the divine to the very whole nature to unfold itself. The whole universe unfolds itself, nature unfolds itself, that is called evolution. The whole biological impulse which unfolds at the biological level. At human level, there is also the unfolding factor that he can unfold his physical faculties, he can unfold his intellectual faculties. Same way he unfolds his spiritual and moral faculties, then what stops him? His will himself puts a handicap on him. So the unfolding urge is that inherent in man. This is what we must theosophically stand to assert. That man is born not in sin, but is born with a divine origin. And that divine impulse is given to him to achieve. He is not born, he is made to become a god. He is born in the making. He is actually a god born into human flesh. Unfortunately caught up in this environment. But at the core of his being is a god in the making. He wants to become a real deva. So this urging man. So there is a great hope for humanity. You can be sure about that. In spite of all the ugly things which we see around us, let us never lose hope in man. Because to lose hope in man is to betray ourselves, to betray the divine will. The divine has planned it in such a way. Sri Aurobindo says there is a great future for humanity. This is to repine about man and to say, oh, man is an ugly creature all the time. In spite of all the bad news that we are listening, which we are hearing in the papers, in spite of that, human emphasis, the positive side of human nature, that in man, there is that impulse. The dual impulse, he wants him to achieve, he wants him to grow, he wants to unfold. And therefore, his image, as you said, all that we are is what we are thought of. And if you continually think of ourselves as a physical being, we are limited our thought to our physical being. If we think of ourselves as our brain being, that our intellect is nothing else but a production of the brain activity. All our intellectual activity are merely brain activity, then we are dependent on the brain. But there is in man, there is a hard quality, the quality which he wants to unfold. And as you said, motivation psychologists, and particularly these positivists, they are known. No, he has got in him potential. That potentiality can be unfolded, provided given a proper urge, impulse to him. So this idea about the gardener is born with certain feeling. He's also born with a limited this. But has he really made effort to till the soil? Has he made effort to weed out what is not wanted? To choose the right kind of seeds? Now, what are those seeds? The seed thoughts. Then we are here to select the proper seeds. Aren't we here? What are we here for? That's right. We are here to collect proper seeds for thought. Seeds that can only fructify into something great in us. So many of us have begun by collecting this kind of small teachings from the great scriptures of humanity and from the literature of theosophy. Those beautiful seed ideas, if we can cultivate them, we take them as, pocket them as our own property and use them as proper field. But before that, the field is the mind. The mind must be purified. And all the dust and dirt must be cut. It has to be thin, it has to be washed hard. Then one has to work towards it in the right direction. So the whole responsibility and labor is that of the gardener, the fielder, the one agriculturist. So we are the agriculturist, and that in spite of the limitations of the field and this, we can do a lot about that, to whichever way we want to achieve, that it is. And therefore the responsibility is of our own. Complete responsibility. Now, because it is said, this is why it is said. There is about third or fourth quotation. Thoughts are dynamic forces. A thought on each departure from the mind is said to associate itself with an elemental, thus becomes an active entity. Is it attracted wherever there is a similar vibration or let us say a suitable soil? Now here is some spiritual, a very important contribution of theosophy, that we think that thoughts are fugitive. They are merely thinking and they are just passing out and are lost. See, under the law of conservation of energy, nothing can be lost. Not a single thought energy can be lost. It may transform itself into another form of energy, maybe. But the thought, once generated, it will remain somewhere around us, above us, or in the cosmos. So it affects two ways. The thought affects what is called the nature's own recording mechanism. This is called the astral life, which is recorded there and remains there. And it is a reflecting surface. Therefore, as our thoughts go up, they also reflect down upon humanity. So the sum total of the thoughts that we have generated goes up, goes on the astral light, and then reflects on humanity. To that extent, we have influenced others. Our thoughts, which are arising, like the fumes, either we influence others for good, or we infect others for evil. So the quality of our thought, we are responsible for the quality of our thought because we are going to willingly infect others. That is one we are looking at. Another is that it becomes an entity. how a thought form can become, it takes a form of itself. It takes a form because it takes up nature's finer forces called the elemental. Elemental lives are nature's minute forces. Low people call them gods, little unlines and various names are given to them, fairies and this and that. But they are actual realities. These are susceptible to our thought form. And they go to those places to which they are attracted. So here there is a law of attraction. So whatever that comes out of us goes to those to which they are attracted. They are attracted to consubstantial nature. So evil goes to an evil man, the good goes to the good man. So if I have generated that good thoughts, the quality of the thought that I generate, stay quietly even in my prison or in my dungeon, even if I am a prison house, I am still free to generate great thoughts with which I people the whole Corinthian space for good alone. By my thought I can help others without going out of the house. You can generate compassionate thoughts. You can bless all the four sides of the earth. This is not the form of meditation Buddha considers. That east, west, north, south, up and down. Meditate on what's called Maitri Bhavana. Think good about others. Wish well wishes. Think goodwill, thought of goodwill. If you send out, they not only go out as seeds in helping others, but they are coming back to us as our field. And they will fructify our field. So sooner or later, the man who has helped others finds that he has helped himself. And another very beautiful Bibi says that each time you plant a flower in your neighbor's garden, a loathsome weed is removed from your own garden. Each time you plant the rose in your neighbor's garden, when you come back to your own garden, you find that that weed which was obstructing your way has gone away. That means in me there was one obstinate nature which I am going to overcome by continually fighting against my nature. It's no use merely fighting. Go out and help another. Go out and make another man happy. Go out and help in raising the consciousness of another man. And when you return to your own nature, you find that sooner or later that lower quality becomes less and less and less. Instead of fighting against it, sooner or later it departs from you. This is one of the alchemy of human transformation. We can transform ourselves by this little job of compassionate thought, compassionate act. So the whole bundle, all the central thing is our own responsibility. The very quality of thought that we generate, the thought of positive thinking, what we think of about thinking good of others, completely well-wished. If you find someone who is completely bothering him, meditate on him and say, I am going to convert this man by my feelings and thoughts. I have forgiven him. I have no anger, canker against him. I really want to wish him well. May he grow, may he progress. Think on him, you will really find some transformation within this. Try to pick up the image of that man before him and meditate on him. This is one of the alchemy, this is one of the techniques by which you can make an enemy of them. Maybe if not in this life, in some life to come. It is said that if you meet your enemies, three consecutive lives. You meet your friends also. You meet your enemies again and again. Because you attract them to yourself. Is a law of attraction. But if you forgive him, if you allow him, he is no longer, you are very transformed him. As Abraham Lincoln once said to one lady, she says, oh, you are wishing well of your enemies. I mean, you see, he, after the end of the battle, he forgave those, I forgot about that other camp. And he said, you release all the soldiers. After all, they are Americans, you release them. And they said, what are you doing? They were our enemies. He said, madam, if I befriend them, have I not converted them? Have I not defeated them? If I befriend them, have I not defeated them? So you want to defeat them by even converting them by making them your friends. You can convert your enemy to become your friend. And that's the way of defeating. This is one of the techniques. And he had the courage to do it. forgiving all the prisoners in his camp and let them go to their own country. He has set a tremendous example. Those confederates, they were called the confederates on the other camp. They became his friends. They immediately joined him sooner or later. And that's what, that was a great person of America. This is a greatness of man. So, I think we can go a little further that how to train our mind to do that. Of course, this chapter on vigilance is a bit difficult. But then it tells you very beautifully, at least two things appeal to me very much. Of course, he talks about the bhikkhu. He talks about those who have already undertaken self-chosen discipline. He is not talking about the ordinary man in the street. The chapter of vigilance is addressed to the bhikkhus. But he says, no. Meditative, this is the third shloka. Meditative, persevering, ever strenuous in endeavor, the tranquil ones. The word uses dhira. Dhira means slowly moving. They are not restless, they are not agitated. Tranquil ones. There is this answer, tranquil ones. Dhira. They attain nirvana ultimately, which is the highest way. Continually grows the glory of that man. Glory is that prakash, that yash. Who is wakeful, mindful, whose deeds are pure, whose acts are deliberate, and who are self-controlled, and who lives according to law. I mean, just sums up the whole other discipline. But then the word uses two things, the tranquil one and the wakeful one, the word vigilance. In other words, that if you realize that tremendous responsibility is ours, that divine has given us a wonderful field of work and also a few seeds with which we started. And even today, as elders, we have got enough material to live with, to fructify, to use it in a creative and a cultivated way. So if we really consider ourselves as a responsible gardeners, and that our field of work is not that limited to our own family and our own personal concern, but the whole world is our field. What are we doing? What are we doing for the world? That if you want to go to the field, we don't have to become social workers. We need not have to go into the field work. You may, of course, certainly, when the time comes, when there is strength and energy, you must do that. Even after retirement, at least let us be consultants to others. To that extent, we can keep ourselves busy and useful. But there is a vast field, the whole world wants us. The world needs every single individual. Not only your own country needs you, it's an empire. Every single citizen is needed by this world, by this country. And then every citizen is a very useful citizen. We have to help him to cultivate, we have to help him to grow. But begin with ourselves, of course, to start with. But if you become a citizen of the world, that is our vision now is very wide. We are no longer citizens of our own family, or a member of the family, a member of our society, a member of the club. This is very local, true, we name. But more important, the continual concern for what is happening to the world. And not be dejected, never be dejected. For the divine spark is there, always there in every human heart. It just wants to shine forth. It is merely covered over by this phase of wrong thinking. Only what is required is a little bit of mindfulness, a little bit of vigilance, a little stretching, a little bit. This is a little bit because it is, as Buddha himself says, that drop by drop, a whole lake can be filled. Whether the drop of sweetness or the drop of bitterness, you can bitter drops by which you can make the whole field very bitter. Or it is up to us to make it a sweet field. So the kind of choice is entirely ours. Instead of blaming outsiders, see these three fingers are constantly pointing at us. We blame environment, we blame others for all that has happened to us, but actually man himself is responsible, and therefore we are what we think. It's not only think, but feel, and the kind of image that we carry with us about ourselves. If our image is purely human, we are not human, we are
essential nature of love. This is the most important contribution of all the world's teachers. The great teachers came to this world to set an example, to say, yes, we are divine in our essential. Please remember that. Try and remember that. We are human first, but we are divine in our essential nature. That is, we are waiting to become such. So we can take your questions.
Yes.
Okay.
What you call the fugitive thoughts, which we do not notice, is there any impact on our nature or action or anything else?
Oh yes, fugitive thoughts. Oh, those fugitive thoughts.
Often we do not notice it.
I forgot to bring the quotation when he says that literally says they form a large seed. Invisibly. These little fugitive thoughts, they tremendously collect the cloud. You know how the cloud is collected? By these small particles of dust, around which a little particle of water is, a particle of little tiny dust, upon which there is a film of water, which collect together and form a cloud. And that cloud becomes ultimately a whole rain. So these dust particles and the little moistures that we leave out from ourselves, in the long run it is going to rain on us. Not only rain on others, it is going to rain us. So of course this wool gathering thoughts that we do, the idle thinking. This idle thinking, this what's called the talk, that talk shop, and that little talk that we do in our literally wasting our time on flimsy little things of life. I mean, if you are really conscious, a time comes, really a mature man is a thoughtful man. See, once Einstein and Newton, both were asked the same question. How did you achieve this goal? How did you came across these scientific conclusions? By constantly thinking on it. That's the answer I got. By constantly, the moment they are free, they are thinking on that problem. Even going to bed, they thought on a problem and went to bed. And some of them have achieved the answer in their dream. Some scientists who are thinking on a problem, they have slept on the problem and awoke with an answer to the problem. So these are the people who don't let them go, don't allow these fugitive thoughts to go. We are human beings, of course, we do allow ourselves to let go. But this letting go is a very difficult thing. That's the whole burden of humanity. 99.9% of the life, we are spending, you can imagine out of the 24 hours, 8 hours we are sleeping. One third of our lost. One third part of our day is finished. Other one third gossiping is that cow, pure, now, dough, khalas. Finished. And then hardly we give time to meditate, to study, to devotion, to higher things of life, to pursuits which can make us better. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't enjoy ourselves, we should enjoy music, we should enjoy culture. You should enjoy wonderful things from there. But creative things, wherever there is creative, enjoy yourself, why not? By the way, one thing we forgot about this world achieving people, they've got a wonderful sense of humor. A wonderful sense for seeing things where nothing exists. They're able to see a beauty in an uncouth piece of stone. He saw a stone and he laughed and says, oh, you look like a monkey. No, a stone doesn't look like a monkey, but to that fellow, he actually laughed at that stone, he said, monkey. There's a Chinaman, a story of a Chinaman, who just suddenly laughed and said, well, he looks like a funny monkey. Well, he has such a sense of humor. And in a stone he was saying that little mischievous monkey. Now this kind of effervescence, this kind of thing, you have to cultivate, of course. You have to be very charming, very sweet, sweetness. This is the test of a man. At the end of life, how sweet you become. Are you bitter about life, about yourself, about your environment? Or are you sweet? The smile is there on your face all the time, all the time. In fact, when you are meditating, specially put a smile on your face and meditate. When you are thinking, put a smile on your face and meditate. Be happy. And that's the blessing, be happy. That's the blessing we always give to others. So happiness is the real nature of man. Satchit ananda. This is the real nature of man. So fugitive thoughts, of course, we are all capable of that. But remember, the responsibility we are creating is clouds. And the cloud is, of course, formed on us first. So there is a proof that they are saying that the clouds that God sends are few. But the clouds that man make are many. So we make our own clouds. Although that God also sends clouds to us, that is, karma brings clouds to us, our destiny brings clouds to us. But the clouds that we make are men. So it is our own makeup. We all make the life, the kind of life we live. Thank you.